I'd like to share a poem with you today by Hafez. It was a printing mishap, so I'll be reading out the poem. This is called Now is the Time. Now is the time. Now is the time to know that all that you do is sacred. Now, why not consider a lasting truce with yourself and God? Now is the time to understand that all your ideas of right and wrong were just a child's training wheels, to be laid aside when you can finally live with veracity and love. Now is the time for the world to know that every thought and action is sacred. That this is the time for you to compute the impossibility that there is anything but grace. Now is the season to know that everything you do is sacred.
Hi, I'm Grayson. I'm in my first year at Reed, and it's also my first time here at YU, so I'm very honored to be up here speaking to all of you. So there's this saying, time heals all wounds. There's a part of me that wants that to be true, but I don't think it is. I think that time can heal some wounds. I think that time can help all wounds a little bit, but I truly don't believe that time heals all wounds fully. Instead, what I think time can do is give us a new perspective on things, whether they are wounds or big or small truths of our life and pasts. For example, and I swear this is relevant, when I was younger, I hated eating Snickers bars. Or rather, I hated the peanuts inside of them. I would eat some of a Snickers bar, careful to store the nuts in my cheek like a squirrel, and then I would track down my mom. In probably the most adorable way possible, I would grab her hand and spit all the peanuts in her. Now, looking back, it seems really gross, and it probably was really gross. But today, I'm proud to say I've come to appreciate peanuts, though I've not quite reached the level where I eat almonds and other nuts. But I've eaten countless Snickers bars without spitting them out into my mom's hand. Though it seems like a small thing, it's only one of many things that have changed over the course of my youth. I've also gone from a terrified of driving 16-year-old to a slightly less terrified of driving 19-year-old. I've successfully gone from living with my parents and siblings to living in a dorm out in a different state. I've learned that I can function fairly well as a person without my parents constantly being around. Looking back on these things, I never thought I could get to where I am now. But I have a ways to go and I have a lot to learn. Maybe in a few years, I'll have a different perspective when I look back about my ability to get through college, find apartments, and get a job. Maybe I'll get less homesick when I'm away from my parents. Maybe I'll feel more confident. And maybe I'll decide that almonds and cashews are my new favorite snack. My past isn't filled with wounds, but rather truths. And as time passes, my perspective on them changes. And I look forward to the day that I can look back on my life and smile at all the wonderful changes time has wrought. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. So I also had a printing mishap, and so I'm also on my phone. My name is Kate. This is now the fourth time that I have stood up in front of this congregation, so if I look familiar, that's why. You see me a lot. The biggest thing that signifies is that I am now a senior. Sometime in the next 7 weeks, I will produce a thesis, take my last final, write my last papers, and graduate. I will be moving into a time in my life where most things feel like unknowns. I sometimes feel myself desperately trying to prevent the passage of time, hoping that if I could only just concentrate on this moment enough, I might be able to remain in it. It's a fantasy. All around me, time is moving. I am moving. My world is changing. Again. While we were chatting about possible topics for our service, and the subject of time came up, I was reminded that, in what seems like an age ago, Bailey and I had once led a group discussion on the subject of time. I recall being puzzled as I was searching for opening words. So little existed on the passage of time. There was a lot about the seasons changing and a lot about death. but the hidden nuggets of beautiful poetry and inspiring quotes that I'm used to finding when I undergo these searches, they just weren't really there. In fact, in the fall, I remember being so unsatisfied with what my search results produced that I wrote a passage out of the book I was reading for my English class. It was from Marcel Proust's book, Swan's Way, the first volume in his seven-volume novel, In Search of Lost Time. Needless to say, the novel deals pretty explicitly with time, but it's very complicated. We ran into this problem again when preparing for this service. It made me stop to think. I looked through some of the sermonlets I've given over the past 4 years. There was one about spring and the passage of seasons, and another about unexpected journeys. In many ways, these have also been about time. This made me wonder, why might we as college students be particularly concerned with the passage of time? In some ways, the answer is obvious. College is a series of upheavals. You arrive as a freshman, it might be your first time you've ever been away from home, or at least for a long time. You meet new people, start a new life, get comfortable in it, and then it changes. The year ends, you move for 3 months, back to old friends, old habits. You aren't the same, and they aren't the same. In some ways, it's new. Then you go back to school. You're in a new living situation, you've been away for 3 months. Some of the people you love are gone. In this familiar place, it also feels different. You repeat the cycle again and again. You get accustomed to the constant change. It begins to feel almost comfortable. You know what to expect, and then it's all over. You look forward into your life, and it's a space that feels completely unknown. Even if you know what you're doing in the immediate future, your current reality is so different from what the future will be that it's hard to conceptualize. I've had these fears before. I had them 4 years ago, before coming to college. They proved to be unjustified, but I still can't help but worry. I'm searching as hard as I can for a cause for them. I need more time to process what this ending will actually mean. Unfortunately, despite my best efforts, time is passing. Each day is a day that I need to hold on to spend time with the people I love, to write 3,000 words, to get 8 hours of sleep. I find myself thinking that there just isn't enough time, that I need more. Then I remind myself that this is all I get. I don't have a pause button. I have the time that I have, and I need to use it.
Hello. My name is Elias, and I'm here to talk about time. Ever since I was a small child, what I have always wanted most was more time. I do not mean extending my years into the far future. I mean more time for every piece of time that I had. More between lunch and dinner, more between night and morning, more between Sunday and Monday. There was no satisfaction, no sense that I was ready to move forward. I always wished there was a way to inflate time, to bend it to my will, so that it would pass as I wished it to pass. Is there some way to bend time, to make it flow, then along a warped path? The answer is actually yes. We can do whatever you want to time, with the annoying side effect that whatever perturbation we make to time, we also make to ourselves and everything else, such that we cannot tell, let alone appreciate our manipulation of time. For no matter the path we make time take, time drags us along that very path. Now, what I just said might be impossible, and it is. But it's only impossible when we see ourselves as static objects that time acts upon. For if we are immobile people, traveling rigid paths, then in order for time to be consistent, it must be rigid too. Now that's a fine viewpoint to take, ignoring Einstein's relativity, which we can often do. It makes a lot of sense, and is much easier to deal with than trying to see time as flexible. However, if we let time decide the paths we take, then we can imagine a perspective from a separate rigid time that peers into our flexible perturbed time, and in our imaginations have as much time as we want. There is an object out there that is very important to many of us, that time acts upon. We call it the body. As time acts upon the body, blood flows, biological cycles continue, muscles contract, Thoughts happen, nerves fire, emotions flare. In the absence of time, the great devourer of all things, what remains is a frozen corpse, devoid of a soul to run it. All our actions, our lives, our personalities, our ways that time acts on the body. This is why we do not perceive the bending of our time, because we are part of time itself. But we can be more general than that. We are the way time acts in our communities, in our towns. We are even the way in which time acts in our planet. What we build, time builds. What we devour, time devours. We build our towns, we devour them. We build things on our planet, we devour things on our planet. We build ourselves, and as far as I see it, we devour ourselves as well, if by no other means than simply continuing to be. Each moment we act, we stand time onward, and we cannot help that we act, for tied as we are to time, even waiting is an action in itself. There is no true passivity, no true laws, and yet we all see moments of stability, where as far as we can tell, time stands still. In the end, our sense of stability sets time aside where it is distant from us. Time is now an outsider, often an enemy, which acts upon us without our will. We try to preserve it, to extend it, to delay it. We are separate from it, simply enslaved by it. Time is the indomitable force of nature that we cannot escape. I do not appreciate the fact that I have been made an enemy to time. Yet, I cannot imagine what I would be if I lacked any sense of time standing still. I encourage all of you not to think of time as your enemy, for if you truly wish to know the great devourer of all things, you need only look into yourself.
Thank you.
Hi everyone. My name is Miranda. I'm a freshman at Reed. I'd like to talk about time in relation to a Buddhist concept called dukkha. Buddhist teaching consists of four noble truths, which one must come to understand in order to reach enlightenment. The first of these truths is that everything is dukkha. It's generally agreed upon that the word dukkha is untranslatable, but most people translate it as suffering or agony. However, many people who study Buddhism agree that the feeling of dukkha is actually closer to impermanence. All is impermanence. Nothing lasts. Leaves fall to the ground and decompose, new trees sprout from the soil. Change is the natural state of our world, so why is our instinct to resist it? We search for what is permanent, what is dependable, what is stable. In a world that is constantly changing, we cling to what we know and what we can count on. Our community, our loved ones, our memories. We search for certainty in a world that is dukkha. And there is surely comfort in regularity, but perhaps with a shift of perspective, comfort can be found in the impermanent nature of our world as well. Though we are constantly surrounded by change, I think we can agree that some changes are bigger than others. This year, as a freshman in college, I experienced my first really big, completely life-altering change. Suddenly, I was no longer surrounded by the family, friends, and community that I lived with for so many years. I was without my childhood home and the city I grew up in. All the big and the little things that I grew to depend on over the years were now many miles away. All of the permanent, consistent aspects of my life were completely removed. And I was on my own, with no routines, no old favorite spots, no family, no childhood best friends to find comfort in. And at times it was really scary, and part of me wondered if it was worth it. But I started to look at the people around me and wonder how many big changes they'd seen in their lifetimes, how many times they'd moved to a new city or lost touch with an old friend, how many more times it would happen to me. And I realized that I needed to change my perspective. I couldn't live in this world, so full of change, if I was going to fear and resent it. And I couldn't enjoy my new life if I was going to spend all my time missing my old one. I opened my eyes to my new surroundings and saw that, along with new challenges, came new opportunities. And though I was missing old friends, I was meeting new and wonderful people every day. I tried to approach unfamiliar experiences with excitement instead of fear, and I began to enjoy that I could feel myself growing with every new thing that I tried. And now I think I'm just beginning to understand the concept of dukkha. Change is the natural state of this world. What's unnatural is to fight it. But I must admit that, though I believe the practice of accepting impermanence is essential to comfortable living, there are certain things I want to keep in my life forever. And though Buddhism would tell me not to cling to anything, any sort of happiness or pain or success or failure. There are things I still hold on to. I know my family can't live forever, but I still hold on to my love for them as if they could. And I still hold on to my best friend from high school, even if my mom says it sometimes keeps me from meeting new people. But I've never regretted a moment I spent with her. I think the most important thing to remember is that we can only hold on to so much. When we welcome new experiences and new people, we don't always have enough room in our hearts to hold on to the old ones quite so tightly anymore. But it doesn't make them any less important. Every person, every place, and every experience that we allow into our lives changes us and helps us grow, so they never really leave. We just learn to hold on to the most important things and accept the power and the beauty of impermanence. And the best part is we get to choose what we keep. We can choose what love to hold on to and what things continue to fill our hearts even when our lives change. And if holding on to those things starts to hurt us more than it helps, we can choose to let them go. There's beauty in impermanence. New growth, new experience, new happiness, and new opportunities can be found every day. And there's profound comfort in knowing that even the worst of times can't last forever. Change is always on its way. So let us be grateful to find each other in an ever-changing world. Let us experience new love every day. Let us know that we are alive and being renewed each second, and that independent of our memories of yesterday and our expectations of tomorrow, we live now in a precious, eternal moment.
Hi, I'm Sophia. I'm a sophomore at Reed College. Last semester, I took a religion class called Theory and Method, where we studied how various academics have explained religion, often through theories of time. Many of them thought religion used ritual to create a special sense of time. Rappaport, an anthropologist, expanded on the work of 20th century sociologists Eliade and Durkheim, contrasting linear history with cyclical time. Cyclical time is created through ritual. We Unitarians do this with our yearly water and flower communions. Humans have been doing this since we've been around. Linear time, on the other hand, is something created only when we started to record our histories. While christenings and end-of-life events give us a sense of birth and death as a cycle, historical narrative sets up time as a march forwards. Before, religious monuments could have stood for infinity. Now, despite our awe, we know exactly how long they have been there. Each life, instead of being a part of something that will circle back around, becomes something with a beginning and an end, something that will contribute to an inevitable march forward, whether that be towards progress or not. Our sense of time is both biological and creative. While the hormone melatonin does fluctuate in day, night, and yearly cycles, helping to regulate our physiological functioning, calendars vary widely across cultures, especially when you look at concepts such as weeks. Time is inescapable. We are very aware that we were born and will die, and we are trying to figure out how best to use the time in between. However, time is also something that we can manipulate and interpret. As someone who has personally experienced the sense of transcendence that community and ritual can bring, I love the idea that religion creates sacred time. However, these theorists have missed a lot by setting up a contrast between the sacred and the ordinary. Eliade says that sacred time is meant to give meaning to ordinary time. When we come away from church and our rituals, it should be with a renewed sense of purpose for our everyday lives, not just an appreciation for the special thing that just happened. I like that. I agree that history often has a damaging narrative. There is often focus on famous individuals who have done outstanding things, how they have detracted from or supported progress. This is a tempting narrative. As someone who is part of multiple marginalized communities, I would love to believe, and I think a lot of us UUs believe, that we are on a road to slow but inevitable progress towards more justice and equality. But this kind of story can also be destructive. There is an emphasis on finding meaning through great deeds, despite the fact that most of us will not make it into the history books. One of my friends recently complained to me that she wanted to be, quote, the best writer. The thing is, very few of us will be the best at something. There are 7 billion people on the planet. However, not being the best doesn't mean not mattering. How amazing is it that there are so many people who love to write and that they are all doing it in such unique ways? They are following in a tradition of storytelling that was started before word could be recorded. There's some infinity for you. The narrative of a march towards progress can also ironically silence many minorities. It is true that modern America needs a lot of changing, but let's remember that many Native American tribes had much more accepting views of gender and sexuality before colonists established gender binaries and the heteropatriarchy. A big part of the intersection of the trans movement and the fight for Native American rights currently is the concept of two-spirit, a gender identity that does not fit into our ideas not only of cisgender, but even of transgender as being either someone assigned female at birth whose identity is male or vice versa. It is an incredibly powerful identity that exists entirely outside of colonial models. Historical narrative does not necessarily have to be an unsacred thing, but we need to infuse it with the meaning that ritual and sacred time give us. Instead of telling the stories of a few great people whose model we hope to emulate, let's instead see history as a cycle as well. Let's celebrate the places that we identify with a story from 100 years ago, appreciate how we are doing some things that have been done before and some differently. We are not always going to get things right, but we have gotten them right before, and we can get them right again. We will continue to grow, both as individuals and as societies. We will sometimes revert back to old and harmful ways, but we have, both in our own lives and in our larger histories, moments of great beauty and acceptance, and we will find our way back to those things as well.